For July the 28th, 2023, we talk about Viewfinder, Amnesia the Bunker, again, how the SAG-AFTRA strike affects video games, and much more. Welcome to Level 466. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I should have checked and seen who was not here last time. I believe it was you, David. No, I think we were all here. No, were you here? You weren't here, David. I'm all messed up.
Are any of us really here?
I mean, in the room with us right now? Let's see here. No, it was all of us. Anyway,
time to start flipping coins.
Yeah. How you doing, David?
Pretty good. Just bobbing and weaving. I'm in the time of the year, and yes, I realize this is an incredibly dumb, like, I don't know, yearly tradition, but where I basically start binging on all of the pop culture I missed in preparation for Dragon Con.
Okay. You just want to be conversant.
Right. So I got a subscription to Crunchyroll, and I've got to say, it is amazing the degree to which, like, the stereotypes of what anime gets made are not stereotypes.
Just factual reporting.
Yeah. Like, well, just in particular, the I forget what they call them. It's like whatever the Japanese word is for portal.
Like I'm stuck in another world kind of thing.
Yeah, isekai. Exactly. Yeah. And where they are literally just the title of the show is a description of the premise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it'll be like, I'm in a fantasy world, but oh no, I'm a skeleton. And like, yeah, there are hundreds of them.
Yeah.
I've heard about the one of being reincarnated into a vending machine.
Yep, that's one of them.
Okay. I mean, so do you sort by popularity? Like, how do you chart your plan of attack on this? Because, like, you probably hit, like, the, I mean, no-brainer Chainsaw Man, right?
Right. So I finished that. One of the best things I've seen in a long time. Surprisingly, normally I'm really not a fan of gore. But
it's different. I have not seen the anime. I'm currently reading the mangas, mostly to appreciate, like, monster design.
Right.
Oh, so it's not that you're not a fan of, like, gore in general as a feature in movies or anime. There is an anime named Gore.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
But case, what I think the thing for me is it's not mean-spirited.
Yeah, it's real, like, it's not mean-spirited, and also there's a real, like, contrast between the gory parts and not gory parts.
Like, right, exactly.
It feels like they're explicitly putting the two next to each other, again, based on the manga, right?
Yeah. It's also very strange because it somehow manages to be, like, incredibly juvenilely horny.
Yes.
And surprisingly wholesome.
Just the way, yeah, I mean, the way that he sets his sights on power, because
you're just describing Japan at this point.
This is a character that literally his sole goal in life is to get laid, and, like, him just being a creep on lots of lots of chicks, but then also realizing that, like, oh, that's not actually that fulfilling.
Yeah, yeah. And just like all he wants is a smooch from Makima, I think. And then and then just like Power's like, oh yeah, no, just you can touch my boob if you want. And like, yeah. Like, well, no, wait, this doesn't mean anything. This actually kind of sucks. Right. You know, like that kind of thing. Just kind of like, oh no, there's a and
which comes from like he has like, no taste because Power is best girl.
Well, yeah. But also it's he's a person who grew up entirely deprived. You know,
oh,
like
yeah.
Just grew up on the street being used by gangs and stuff. Yeah, no, it's not a good upbringing. I don't know. It's a neat manga. Not watch the anime, yeah. Though I understand people enjoy it.
Other than that, and this, I'm not going to make this like anime episode, whatever. But other than that, started watching My Hero Academia, which is basically just Naruto, but better.
Okay. Is it literally about superheroes out of school?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it is.
Hmm.
Are you just like catching up on the most recent season, or are you like starting from ground zero?
I am starting from ground zero on that.
That one strikes me, at least in my mind, that occupies the space of one that's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I think it depends on what you mean. Like, to me, like, been around for a long time is, like, I watched it on Toonami.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it's not that, but it is definitely, I don't know, they're, like, 3 or 4 seasons in, at least.
Yeah.
And you're going to watch all this before Dragon Con?
Well, it's aspirational.
Yes, yeah. He's going to get through as much. Yeah, get through as much as he can. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like with anime, it's not just like, oh, this has X number of seasons. It's also spinoffs and like weird alternate continuity stuff, you know, that basically started for like cash cow reason, you know, kind of things. So how many episodes of this is not necessarily a simple question answer.
If anyone's looking for something good is, I hope I'm pronouncing this name right, because Japanese, it's Bocchi the Rock.
Okay.
Which is basically about a high schooler who has just crippling social anxiety that semi-inadvertently joins a rock band.
Hmm.
And it's, you know, very funny, but also a very accurate, like, realistic depiction of someone who has, you know, pathological level social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So, good stuff. But yeah, no, that's what I've been doing is lots and lots of the animus.
Yeah. Not bad. That's like, what, that's at the end of August?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Dennis, speaking of getting ready for convention stuff, how's Gen Con prep going?
Yeah, it's going. I now have a place to stay, so cool. I'm set on that front. That all worked out. And mostly I'm just very excited for it.
Mm.
It's crazy. You know, I went through so much more of my product at Origins than I thought I would, that it's kind of like I show up with what I have, and when it's gone, it's gone. And then I guess I'm just enjoying the con from there on out.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see how long that takes. But yeah, getting excited there, doing all the good dad, good husband things up front, trying to make me being gone for 4 days a smooth transition.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that categorically does not fall under that banner is we are getting Luke a drum set for his birthday.
Oh, no. Is it an electronic set or is it an acoustic set?
Well, we did get an electronic set, so okay. There is that saving grace.
I was going to say, even just for your neighbors, man.
but his first lesson is the day before I leave. Because we got him lessons too. So basically, I will take him to his drum lesson on Wednesday night. If all goes well, that will get him incredibly psyched up for it and all that. And then I will peace out for 4 days. Have fun with that.
Yeah, later. At least he'll be sitting still. Like sitting in that still, true, but in one place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is the hope that this will tire him out in his limitless energy, or?
Maybe direct it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah, like if he's.
Direct it into noise.
Directed into noise that can be piped through a headphone, yes.
Yes.
And we'll see how that goes. It could also be something that he touches once or twice and then never thinks about again. With gifts, you never know.
Yeah.
It's impossible to tell.
Has he played any like the rock bands or anything like that to like see if he likes that sort of thing or?
No, but he'll like get out pots and pans and drum in the kitchen. Like, go the classic route.
And he's a beatboxer.
At one point he was into beatbox stuff, right?
That is true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which in his mind, he is still very into beatboxing, but really that just means that every once in a while he'll be like, oh, listen to this. Blurt out a riff. What do you call it when you beatbox?
Scatting.
Drop some bars.
Drop some bars. Yeah. Beat some boxes. And then he doesn't think about it for another month or so.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, I could see him drumming and beatboxing at the same time.
Hey.
He stated he likes to sing as well. So he's like, Dad, this, I'm sure no one's ever done this before, but I think I might try to be like a singer and a drummer.
Well,
I mean,
I was like, whoa, no,
just,
that exists.
At what point, how early is too early to talk to your kids about Don Henley?
It's 3:00. Do you know where your kids are vis-a-vis Dave Grohl?
I mean, he doesn't sing while he drums is the thing. He's a drummer who happens to write songs just for performances. He's up there. Yeah.
But yeah. So, Phil Collins as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Phil Collins, Karen Carpenter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some good ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll see if he sticks with it and then start introducing him to those.
Nice. Yeah, it's one of those things because like I want to say like, oh, I wish my parents, you know, they're just like encouraged music when I was young. Mm-hmm. But like it's kind of like one of those things like nap time in gym class, like I wouldn't have appreciated it. Now that I'm an adult, I love playing instruments, you know, love music and, you know, recognize that I wasted every nap time in gym class I ever had. Yeah. So I don't know. Hopefully he enjoys it. It's like his birthday coming up, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's this Saturday.
Nice.
And then, like I say, so he gets the drum kit. Then he gets his lesson on Wednesday, and then I'm gone on Thursday. So
later.
Yeah, it's
smoke bombing out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nice. Ben, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. I did the Barbenheimer over the weekend.
Okay.
So that was pretty fun. I ended up seeing Oppenheimer twice and then Barbie once.
Oh, wow.
We were originally going to do it Saturday, but we ended up doing it yesterday instead.
You got to make sure that you've got the proper ratio of, you know, depressing to comedy.
They were both interesting. Barbie was definitely, I would say, more entertaining at a surface level, and we had a really good like theater for it that was like pretty sold out. Oppenheimer, the first time you watch it, is probably the fastest paced 3-hour movie you've ever seen.
That's what my stepdad said. He went to see it today, and I was like, I don't know if I have time for a 3-hour movie in the theater. And he said it goes fast. And then I almost had to reiterate like what not having time means. To go back to the anime, it's not the hyperbolic time chamber or whatever it is. It's like the time passes inside and outside at the same rate.
I will say it goes a lot slower upon second viewings, but
right.
There's also things you might not notice if you watch it a second time. So I don't know.
Do they
trade-offs there?
Do they go through like him losing his clearance and stuff like that?
Or yes.
When did they cut it off?
I don't want to spoil too much, but they cover that.
They talk about him being associated with like anti-war groups and stuff. During a time when that would have been, well, I mean, I said during a time that's still a problem for for anybody associated with the government, which it shouldn't be, etc.
Yeah, it covers a surprising amount of ground, basically from him to college until him till like the 1950s or so. But anyway, whatever. Two interesting movies, at least. Barbie was really good. Yeah, I don't know.
Just hold on. You're skipping something that has taken up some serious worry on your part. I know. How many physicist stereotypes did they bring?
So like the first 5 to 10 minutes, there's a lot of them, and they're very front packed into the movie. So the first time I was watching, I'm like, fucking hell, I'm gonna have to sit through this the entire time. But they wean off of it pretty quickly.
Name some. I know the one that you mentioned was, or maybe this is a mathematician one, but like,
yeah,
drawing on glass, right? Or yes, you know, writing equations on glass.
Yeah, so this is like the physicist equivalent of that, which is where you just see the world in weird ways. And so it's kind of on the same page as like the chess people, how they're depicted in movies, where it's like Queen's Gambit, where you see a chessboard on the ceiling and stuff like that. Yeah, man, directors,
I mean, that sounds pretty accurate.
It is a distinction between like depicting and aggrandizing, like is this shown as like a superpower, right?
I was thinking more along the lines of like crippling neurodivergence.
I think
directors are just very tempted to have to like visually convey something, and so they'll take that at the cost of not accurately depicting how people like this think about things. Because a lot of times it's still like abstract how they think about things, and it's not anything as concrete as like, I see weird things.
And like Oppenheimer's superpower, which was calculation of like orders of magnitude, if I'm correct, that's pretty easy to depict visually.
That's Fermi.
That was Fermi? Fuck.
Yep.
Well, no, I'll see you guys later.
The real thing is, how much of a nerd am I that I knew that?
No, it's fine. I needed to be checked. Got out of my skis a little bit.
I think there's probably a lot of payoffs if you're really into like knowing the people who worked on that sort of thing within the movie. I think the only insight I had is I'd read Feynman's autobiography. And so the way he's depicted in the movie does it justice. There's just funny Easter eggs.
One of my favorite classes in grad school, I took a course that was just history of the atomic bomb. And so I'm actually really looking forward to this because, yeah, it's something I'm really into.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this is a movie for you then.
Okay, enough boring stuff. How was Barbie?
Yeah.
Barbie is good. It's interesting comparing the two because it's like Oppenheimer is just like 3 hours of like a bunch of men in hats and like suits and suspenders working on things that kill one another.
I know for a fact there's at least one scene where he is not in a suit and suspenders.
Is Florence Pugh present?
And then Barbie is just like an hour and a half or 2 hours of making fun of that. It's pretty good.
It's really funny that like, I don't know, a 90-minute commercial for fucking Mattel is being considered woke. It's like, I mean, it's cool that it's calling attention to stuff, but also like, let's be real, folks.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does a good job of showing both perspectives. I think because the show's essentially, or the movie's essentially like the Truman Show is the premise. You know, there's like the Barbie world and the real world sort of thing. And so like the Barbie world is very much like what Mattel would like to believe that they're doing, where it's like positive role models, like Barbie is saying that you can be anyone, you can be a doctor, an astronaut, or whatever. And then when you enter the real world, it's like, oh no, this gives people body dysmorphia. And so like, I think both sides are pretty well presented. So it strikes a balance, I think.
Okay.
Your mileage may vary.
Everything that I've seen from the Barbie movie is just, and this is because of stuff that I'm watching for other shows, but it's like, it seems like the most 90s ass movie that has been produced in a very long time.
I can see that. There's just a lot of dancing and fluorescence and
And just like a real commitment to this is a fucking visual mess and we're leaning into the chaos very, very hard, you know?
Yeah. There's certainly challenges there when everything is pink. Having to make like a diverse like screen can be a challenge. But yeah, it's good. I will say, like, from conversations I've had with people, I do feel like most people didn't even like watch the trailer of Barbie to understand like what the movie is about at all, because it's like most people don't even know it's a satire, you know?
So I
don't know why that is. It seems weird that
I think because it's officially sanctioned. Like something that actually has Barbie's name instead of using some stand-in fake name that obviously connects to the real one.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, it's a 90-minute ad.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just, the reputation that I know it by is the reaction that people like old Benny Shapps, Ben Shapiro has had to it, just the rejecting it because of like, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is, you know, whatever. And it's like, okay, the people that I dislike it, but also how subversive could it be and still have the, you know, official mark on it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hey, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah. I listened to it's like a daily politics podcast called The Majority Report, and every once in a while they have got like a movie guy on, talk about like film recommendations and stuff. And they were talking about the Barbie movie, just had mentioned Mattel had worked very hard to get this movie called Superstar kicked off of every service because it was a movie shot entirely with Barbies, so stop motion animation, but it was about, and I swear I didn't plan this little bit of a throwback here or callback, it's about the real life of Karen Carpenter. Which, if you know anything about the life of Karen Carpenter, is very appropriate vis-a-vis body dysmorphia, you know, and eating disorder kind of stuff. And Mattel was like, no, you absolutely cannot do this. You can apparently still watch it on YouTube and stuff, but that immediately shot it off my list.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, these are both good movies, but Bo is Afraid is the best movie of the year for me. So go see that if you want.
Nice.
What is best movie of the year?
It's a really weird movie called Bo is Afraid that's probably 90% people will not like. So.
It's by Ari Aster, the guy who did Midsommar and Hereditary.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to see Barbie tomorrow. So we'll see if you're lying over there, Mr. Merkel.
So fun fact, my next door neighbors growing up were a couple named Barbie and Ken.
Oh, huh.
Man,
it's weird. Nominative determinism.
Yeah. They actually bought my childhood home.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I was seriously about to ask which one, if it was the one on X Street or Y Street, without recognizing that in public, those are absolutely credit card answers. So, yep. Oh, man. I don't have anything. I got a new grill, and I've got a plan for what to do with my patio. But that is
a teeth grill or a cooking grill?
Cooking grill.
Right. Have you made anything yet?
Yeah, I put it together and I made some burgers, and tonight I had to cook some steak on it. Yeah,
nice.
My old one was just a piece of shit. It rusted out, so got a new one. And
it used to be a piece of shit.
And yeah, I'm worried the baby doesn't think girls can change. Yeah, and I've got a plan for what to do with my patio, but I'll share more when that's actually like done. Because that's just boring homeowner talk, and it's things I am intending to do but have not done yet. So I think we ought to talk about video games. This has been a very productive banter section. So we've got to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Who has something new?
I do.
Ben!
Nice!
I know, a rare occasion. But I'm going to talk about the old thing first. It's the old game Switch. I only got two things this week. The first one is I beat Red Matter 2, the VR PS5 game.
Cool.
Or I guess it's originally on other systems, but ported to the PS5. It is a pretty good game. I would say it's probably the second best game I've played to VR, to the Call of the Mountain. For people who haven't heard the previous episodes, a science fiction game where you're in space on various space stations. You have claw things to grab things around you, and you have like a sweet light gun, and you have a sweet gun, and you solve puzzles and shoot things. So, it ended. It's not like there wasn't like a huge like momentous like game ender or anything like that. But just in general, the game is pretty good at like progression and like slowly giving you more tools and then like slowly giving you ways to like solve puzzles with the new tools that they give you. So yeah, overall it's just a pretty satisfying experience. And then watching the credits for the game, I was really impressed by, it's a pretty small team that made the game. And I think there's only like a few, like one, maybe possibly one programmer who worked on it. And like, so half the people that worked on it were like voice actors and stuff like that. So I didn't realize that it was that small of a studio. So I was very impressed by that. I think it's either in Spain or in South America is where it was developed. So, So overall, I would definitely recommend it. I'd say it's worth it because I think it's only like $20-25 to buy, and I think it's definitely worth that price. I think one of the strengths of it is like the vistas that are in the game. However, the two main vistas is like one at the beginning and one maybe halfway through the game. Then you don't get any of that for the rest of the game, so that's kind of a bummer. But they kind of give you the weird, like, not Silent Hill, but like weird, like surreal, like sections of the game throughout the second half, and those can be kind of cool. So there's definitely room for improvement or expansion on that sort of idea. So maybe there will be a Red Matter 3 for that. But yeah, I don't know. Thumbs up on that. Any questions about that game?
No. I mean, I've got to check and see what the situation looks like on Quest for that, because that sounds fun.
Yeah. And I shared that to one of my friends who's at my apartment yesterday in between movies, and they enjoyed it as well. And I appreciated like kind of like the pacing of the game, where it's like they, you know, parts where they give you like free room to like learn the new tools that you have. It was stuff I noticed more watching someone else play the game.
When you say you showed it to them, you played it and they watched you play it, or they played it?
No, they strapped in and played like the first two levels.
Okay. Yeah. So. It's always such a high stress situation. Either trying to demo a VR game to someone or like having someone playing it, because it's like you're kind of sensorially separated from each other. It's like, I think you're enjoying yourself, or like, hey, I don't know. Or like, I think I've had somewhere they're like, oh, I don't know if I could play it, but why don't you show me? Like, I'd be curious to see like on the TV what you're doing. And I'm in it every second being like, they're hating this. They're hating this. There's no way they're enjoying watching this. I'm screwing it all up.
I have a question. At least like on the PS5 VR, it's like, it'll be both on the TV, like what they're looking at, and the volume will be up and stuff. So like both people are getting the experience, but the person on the helmet has like headphones they can put in. But did you have that experience? Is that the context that you're talking about?
The annoying thing about, so I was on PSVR for this, the sound going through headphones is on on less of a delay than the sound going through the TV.
Yeah.
So it's super disorienting to try to do like play headphones out. So you can converse with your friend, but that's like the only way to do it. So it's a disorienting experience.
I don't think that lags on the PSVR 2, because there's been a couple times where I've forgotten to like plug in my headphones and I'm just playing through the volume of the TV and haven't realized. But yeah, I do get that. It can be dicey putting someone you don't know into it, because if they get nauseous easily, that can like make the run go south really quickly.
Kind of put a damper on the mood. All kinds of stuff that can go wrong.
Yeah.
The thing that I have done with the very small number of people that I have shown VR to is just like have a good, I don't know, just like subset of things to show, like, I don't know, Job Simulator like gets the point across pretty well, you know?
Super hot.
Yeah. Or Super Hot was like conceptual, like I'm thinking specifically of showing it to my brother, but like Beat Saber made sense.
Yeah.
All right, the second thing I got, which is an actual new game, is I played the game called Viewfinder.
Ah, shit, I meant to play this.
This is a game that, well, I'm here to tell you that maybe you don't have to.
Okay. Oh, no. So, explain it. Yeah.
Yeah, this came out a week ago. Even though it looks like it's an indie game, it's a rather large studio that is behind it. But it was based off of an indie game demo. The premise of it is you're kind of on a floating island world and you have a camera that you can take a picture, and like it's a Polaroid type picture, so the picture comes out and develops, and then that picture, you have this special ability where you can hold that up in front of you and then you can project that onto the world. So what do I mean by that? If there's like a floating wall, you can take a picture of that then it's like maybe on the right side of your cam of your picture, and you can just rotate the picture so that's the floor and project that in front of you, and now you have like a bridge that you can walk on and cross over somewhere else.
Like that picture from its perspective becomes like a set of 3D geometry that can be inserted into the world.
Yes.
Yeah. The there's a game that this is really similar to. Continue.
Superliminal, maybe.
Yeah, that's the one. I got confused. I looked up Superland, and I was like, no, that's absolutely not what it is.
Yeah. So it gave me a lot of vibes of Superliminal in the sense that it is a cool idea of a mechanic. And it's a game built around that cool mechanic to see if it can do that. And all of these are kind of like chasing the Hive portal, right? Where it's like a simple idea of like for a puzzle game and elaborating on that. But literally like if I were to rate the quality on them, it's the inverse of time as it goes on, where it's like the quality just dips and dips as time goes on for these types of games.
Yeah. Like because the idea is just drain, like you're sitting in a bathtub with the plug pulled out.
Yeah. So the problem. So the overall problem with this game is that one, the narrative's not that strong. They try and have some characters in, and they try and create some sort of tension with like what's happening as you're like going deeper and deeper into the puzzles. They kind of set it up so that you're given like five different stations that you're going through in the game, and each one is mild spoiler for the setting of the game. I don't think it really detracts too much, but the idea is you're in like a virtual environment, like a VR system kind of, and you're exploring this to try and find something, some sort of MacGuffin that I won't spoil. But there's like five stages that you're going through as you're looking for this, and each stage that you're in was built by a different person is like the narrative conceit. So like one person might have been an engineer, so there's like batteries and things like that in the puzzle, whereas someone else was more concerned with like, I don't know, object permanence or something like that. And so like, so they usually try and tie a puzzle mechanic to each of the five areas. The main problem of the game, though, is, at least for me, and maybe this doesn't hit everybody, but the game design felt somewhat weak to me in the sense that it felt like you're often solving the same puzzle multiple times, and it's just like slightly different context, but not enough to make it like a brand new puzzle. And like, you know, there's usually only one solution to any of the puzzles, even though there's flexibility with like, you know, what picture you take and kind of how exactly you place it in the world. It's either there's only one way to solve it, and it kind of like the details of how you're doing it don't really matter that much, or not. There's not any sort of like clever aha moment that you get. Or even worse than that, the level might be designed in a way that you can just cheese it by like brute forcing things like, oh, I'm just going to take a picture of this and make five bridges and just jump to the exit from this way and just ignore this entire other section of what they might have wanted me to do. So that can occasionally happen. It's not ultra common, but it can happen in a few different places to the point where it's like you're not sure if you solved the puzzle the correct way or not. Or it feels like you're not solving it the correct way, at least. So that was kind of the main diminishing factor of this, or the main like downer of this. And I guess on top of that, this game is also like a $25 game, but since it feels like an indie game, something in the same vein as like Superliminal, it feels like that's like too high of a price. It feels like this would be like a good like $5 to $10 game from a like solo indie developer. But like looking at the credits of this game, it's like there is like, I don't know, 50 to 100 people that worked on this game, something like that. And it's like a rather large studio behind it. And it's like, well, that doesn't really match up. And so I think my playtime for the game was 4 hours, like beating it. So that all of that is like a little bit disappointing, I would say. But I mean, that said, like the main mechanic of the game is really cool, and it is surprising. They try and use it in a couple different contexts too. So like you might pick up a picture of like a chessboard or something like that, and you can project that out, and then the way it's projected out will be kind of unique to whatever it is. But like, so maybe the pieces will be, you know, in three-dimensional spots on whatever you projected out. So there's some like cool things like that that they play around with. But that's not really enough to kind of save it. So it's kind of unfortunate. Like Superliminal, like it wasn't like an A++ game, but it was definitely like B+/A- game for me. Which is the game that we'd mentioned before that came out a couple years ago. That's one where it's like you pick up an object and based on how you drop it, it does like whatever force perspective to make it smaller or larger in the 3D space. That like did a much better job of having like an interesting storyline around it. That was kind of engaging to the end. It had a better job of like kind of having subversive moments that like surprise you. Viewfinder doesn't really pull it off as well as a game like that or a game like Portal. So, yeah. I don't know what to say besides that.
Did the dialogue annoy you?
It's not. I mean, it just felt very superfluous. I don't know. The narrative didn't really hit me that much. The characters they were describing didn't really hit me that much. So was not like a story that I was very invested in. And I think part of that has to do with like, since each of the levels is just this kind of like floating island, like you're not getting a whole lot of like immersion the same way that you are in like Portal, where you're like, oh, I'm in a test chamber, even though arguably you're in a floating island into a floating island. You just have an elevator that connects it, you know? And it's like, so there could have been more polish around that.
I just saw a video of somebody playing it, and you know, they did the game's trick, and then somebody over the radio chimed in and said, "Wait, did that just happen?" And then and then the person playing paused and then went in and then just lowered all the dialogue.
Yeah, just that's about like, right.
I'm happy that there's a backlash to that.
I don't know. It's a bummer because it is such a good idea and it's very well executed. The core mechanic is, you know, of being able to project things onto the world. It just needed more time to cook, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, well, that's all I got.
Okay. Yeah. Viewfinder. I'm trying to find out because something in my head says that that's a Game Pass game, but that I don't think is true. So,
yeah, if it ever goes on sale and it's like, even if it dips below like $10, if it's like $7.50, maybe it's worth it. But if you get on Game Pass, for sure, go for it and check it out. But otherwise, I would probably not recommend it.
Gotcha.
Right. I would recommend other puzzle games before that, I guess.
Yeah. Who else has something new?
I have something that's new to me.
Okay.
I have started to fill in a huge gap in my backlog. I started this week playing Portal 2.
Ooh. You never played that?
I played like the first 5 minutes of it, and then I don't know what happened.
Ah, wow.
I think it was maybe I had it when my PS3 died or something like that. Or like it was right on some console generation jump or some system dying on me. And that's like, I vaguely recall that. I don't remember the specifics, but I think that just knocked me out of finishing it ever.
Okay.
So and, here we go.
And you're not streaming this to Ben so he can watch your first time playing it because
I mean, I can, Ben,
I'm just saying,
I'm not doing it because I'm also mainlining Diablo still, but we'll talk about Portal 2.
Gotcha. I'm just saying there are only so many people who are playing Portal 2 for the first time in 2023.
This is true.
That is a dwindling resource that is very, very valuable to Ben.
To help Ben out here, I have just now made it to the first light bridge puzzles.
Okay.
And I think that's really the first time that truly new mechanics are starting to show up.
Who are you traveling with right now?
If anyone. The ball robot guy.
All right,
really? Cool. No? Yeah. Somebody?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember Lightbridge puzzles. I never read the game.
We don't need to spoil anything. Let's let them enjoy it.
You can divert light bridges. Like they go through portals as well. So you have to shoot the portal for it to go in, you know, for the light bridge to go in, and then it'll come out wherever you shoot the opposite color portal. On a higher level.
I'm sure I saw that, but I do not. I remember some other stuff, but I don't remember that.
Yeah.
What's funny to me is that, you know, for that being one of the new shinies in the game, it feels like they put absolutely zero effort into the graphics of how it comes through the portals. And I'm sorry, I'm going to start with my gripe so then I can gush. So Ben, rest easy. I'm loving it.
You can insult it all you want. I am comfortable enough knowing that that's one of the best games ever made that I don't care if someone likes it or not.
And like a graphical quibble is the least of the concerns about that game.
For sure.
I think that's fair though with Valve games in general. Sometimes they're a little bit rough around the edges. It's usually like the limitations of the engine that they're on. So.
It's interesting that the first puzzle that the light bridge shows up in, like the light bridge is at a height from the floor where the only way you can place the portal that it goes through is in a way that it very obviously like clips through the sides. And it was a confusing moment of like, oh wait, do I need to jump through the portal while I'm on? This feels weird. And obviously that's not going to ruin anything for me. But yeah, it may be a product of the time. I'm wondering because the first portal got the ray tracing overhaul.
Yeah.
And I did I got that and I played a fair amount through that just because now I have something that can do ray tracing. So, and then Portal went on sale, or excuse me, Portal 2 went on sale for like $2 or something. So I couldn't not. So I'm wondering if a remake, not a remake, but a remaster, I guess, of Portal 2 is available or on the way.
It's also the case that Portal 2 is it's 5 times longer than the original Portal.
That's actually the thing. That is my big complaint with Portal and why I never beat it is I felt like it was way too long. And in particular, I just got frustrated with literally everything you do having to solve a puzzle. Just the fact that it's like walking through a doorway requires like a 15-minute puzzle, which wasn't the case in Portal 1.
Oh, that's not true. The second half of the game is like that.
Yeah.
So this is a puzzle game.
Right, but there's a difference between that and literally like every like 10 feet having to solve a new puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, I get the complaint that like it would be nice to have an area where you weren't always solving puzzles if you wanted a break from that, I guess. But
is it a pacing thing? Like, is it like, you know, I don't go to an action movie and then complain like, oh my god, every second of that movie was packed with action.
So I think it's the puzzle to story ratio where they're rich eventually reached a point where it was like, you know, in between meaningful advances in the stories would be like, you know, like 5 or 6 puzzles. Whereas the original Portal, it was pretty pretty condensed.
Here's the thing though, at least right now I'm getting the juicy little banter clips from GLaDOS. And that is sustaining me in the absence of any true story progression.
And also Wheatley is a delight.
Absolutely. And not voiced by Ricky Gervais, as I said a couple episodes ago.
Oh, I feel like we would have corrected you on that.
You did.
We did. Stephen Merchant. So what's happened narratively so far for you, Dennis?
So like I said, I'm at the light bridge puzzles. The GLaDOS has made it clear that like, society outside has kind of collapsed, but I am here. She knows she's been forced to watch me kill her on a 2-minute loop for however long this has been while I've been in cryo sleep, and now she intends to do science with me until I die, at which point she'll take up a new hobby, like I don't know, reanimating dead bodies. So she can do more science with me. So that is basically where I'm at. And then, this introduction of like the light bridge, technology, not that I expect the game to get too much in any broader world stuff, but it's like, oh, this is like, they're introducing something very high tech and, there's the aperture, the scope of what Aperture is working on just seems to be ever expanding.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's revealed that you are so far underground that they don't even bother pumping in oxygen. They just recycle the bit of air that's down here.
Mm-hmm.
All of this is framed in just insulting you and trying to make you feel bad and little.
And if it's canon, all of it's under Cleveland.
Is that right?
Yeah, sweet. Yeah. There's a map in the textures of the original portal that shows that Aperture headquarters is outside of Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah.
I mean, that sounds about right.
I could see it. The puzzles, it's interesting because, like I said, the light bridge is the first one that is, I think, truly new to Portal 2. Everything else is to this point has kind of been treading the ground of the previous game.
It's getting people, I mean, like that first act is kind of about getting folks back up to speed.
Yeah. Oh, completely, yeah. Completely necessary. Even for me, who's played Portal before, it's been so long that I appreciated the reminders. And I think it did a great job of throwing several different pieces. So bounce pads, lasers, companion cubes, all this stuff at you. And kind of getting you up to speed on all that, so you can speak that, you know, that form of the language, so you can start adding new dialects to it very quickly. So they do a good job with that. But I'm excited to go forward further into what is more and more new territory.
Hmm.
Yeah. Like you said, all the voice acting, all the characters are completely amazing and hilarious. I've laughed out loud more playing this game than I have in any game in recent memory.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the funniest games ever made. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
I remembered this from my previous very short time with it, but the, all right, let's just see if you can speak. Say Apple and it's space bar and you jump.
Okay, well, we'll just roll with that.
Yep.
Yeah. Steven Merchant.
So good.
Yeah.
So that's Portal 2. I'm happy to share it in a form that other people can watch. and we'll be going forward through that.
Very cool. Envious that you were playing that game for the first time.
That is one of those, like, you know, envious memory wipe games.
Like, yeah, I feel like that question comes up every once in a while on this show. And so we need to really get serious about inventing that memory wipe now, because I'm playing Portal 2.
Yeah,
I'm gonna need it soon.
It's not
the answer to that question, by the way, is the Stanley Parable.
Just so you can forget it exists.
Oh yeah, not so I can play it again, just so I can forget it.
Jeez, man. Inexplicable, I say.
Oh man. Yeah, so that's the quote unquote new thing. I've been mainlining Diablo 4. I think last week the new season patch notes had just been released. And everyone was convinced that it was a war crime and was going to tank the game and all that stuff.
That's what they always say.
It's been completely fine.
Oh.
And I don't know.
I don't know. What class are you playing?
Yeah, that is fair. I'm playing a druid, which is completely fine. I understand other classes did not get the love maybe that people hoped they would. But yeah, it's crazy. Like, you know, I'm already up to level 50, which is kind of the official entry point into endgame, and have had fun every step of the way. The build that I'm kind of, I haven't looked at any guides. I'm just piecing something together with what falls in front of me. And the build that I've kind of got going together is very fun to play, and uses mechanics from the new season. And so I don't know how much of it is like, yeah, this new season is really fun, or it's just like, I haven't really played druid before, so, you know, this is a class that would have been this fun for me to play in the preseason. But I'm having a blast. I affectionately call this build Clap Your Hands Druid.
Okay.
So the new mechanic that I'm leveraging is there's a special ability you can attach to your equipment where whenever you cast your ultimate, it pulls up to 50 enemies right up to you. So it's like a mass, black hole that pulls everyone in. And the ultimate I'm using is a stun, like a massive stun. So I stun everyone, pull them into me. If you kill an enemy while it is under that stun, it completely refills your resource. And so my resource spending attack is called Landslide, but basically the druid claps their hands together and these two giant slabs come out of the ground and slam together like clapping hands.
Okay.
And so I pull like 50 enemies to one spot and then just clap, 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 clap them into oblivion. And that is very fun.
New way to clap your enemies.
Yeah. Can you set up a chat macro so every time you clap your hands, you say yeah?
I really hope so. The people that have been playing with me in voice chat, I have not been able to stop myself from going clap, 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 clap your hands every time I cast my ult. So I apologize to everyone who's had to play with me.
Yeah. Shouts out to any to other people who just live entirely in mid-2000s indie rock for appreciating that joke.
Yeah, so I've been doing that. The other skill that I'm really enjoying is a boulder, and I just roll it out for me and it picks up everyone in its path, like Katamari Damacy style. And you just like very, very much push people around the level, and yeah, it's a lot of fun. So for having played in the preseason a necromancer that really was kind of focused on standing still and being a death turret. This is a lot more kinetic and both on my side and on the enemy's side, moving them around.
You playing this with controller or mouse and keyboard?
With controller.
Okay. Yeah. From my having last played Diablo 2, even approaching seriously back in, or having last played it back in Diablo 2, like the idea of playing a character who is any kind of mobile is completely foreign to me. So you would almost have to, like, yep. I don't know how you would do that with a mouse and keyboard.
Yeah. And like there's characters on both sides of that spectrum where it's like, man, this would be unplayable if I was on mouse and keyboard. And also, oh, this would be unplayable if I was on a controller.
Yeah,
that's actually a lot of the rogue variants are like that, where a lot of their abilities revolve around piercing attacks. And so you have to line up lines of enemies, which doesn't really work since the keyboard controls just kind of try to select usually the closest enemy.
Oh, you mean the controller?
The controller. Thank you.
Yeah. So, I'm having a blast in the new season. I'm through the seasonal content. I'm into the end game. I think the power gamers are still very angry. But everyone else seems to be having a good time.
I've never met a happy power gamer.
So I feel like I'm going to provide the other side of this this story. Maybe.
Okay, we can just roll right into David if you're done. I mean, if this is the last one you have, Dennis.
Correct. Yes. Good alley-oop opportunity right here.
Yeah. So all I've been playing this week is Diablo, and to be fair, overall, I'm enjoying it. However, I decided to roll a sorceress who is widely regarded as being a class that just got absolutely hosed by the most recent patch, and I can kind of feel it. In particular, the biggest problem it has is that the class is extremely dependent on crowd control, and crowd control just doesn't work reliably on bosses. And then there's also some things that are, I don't think you could necessarily say explicitly broken, but kind of point to problematic areas. You can have at most 6 powers active at a time, so like 6 powers that you can basically, you know, use, and each class also has 6 categories of powers, so it's sort of based on, you know, you using one of each, although in practice it's pretty common for you to have, you know, one power you emit and one you double up on. However, almost all sorceress builds have 3 defensive abilities. So half their abilities are devoted to just not getting one shotted.
Oh, no.
So, like, it's one of those things, like, I think a lot of the complaining is kind of questionable. But there definitely is some, some issues there. Probably though, my bigger complaint would be, I just don't think they actually added that much with this patch. The additions seem like they're mostly just a glorified version of the gems that have been in Diablo games, from at least Diablo 2.
Okay. Did it have like legendary gems that did more than the standard ones?
Yep.
Got it. Yep. And, well, their method of delivering them, I think, sounds cooler on paper than it is in practice. So, yes. Every once in a while, a super powered elite will show up. And if you defeat that, you can then opt into fighting it again as an even more super powered elite. And then that's what drops the final thing. And that's a cool idea, because it's like, there's a difficulty spike here, and you can kind of opt into a mini boss fight. But right now, at least, they're not nearly difficult enough to be noticeable. Mm-hmm. And so there are several times why I will start and then pretty much finish the final boss fight version of this enemy just in the course of normal combat, and be like, oh, that was a malignant enemy. Okay. Huh.
Yeah.
They don't stand out enough. And I don't know if it's fear that if they were actually difficult, people would be pissed and just avoid them or what. But yeah, I would like to see them truly be more of a mini boss fight rather than just kind of barely noticeable.
And I think also, at least to me, it's not even just difficulty so much as just they're not particularly interesting.
Yeah, no, they're not.
Really the only one I can say that's noteworthy is there's one that basically can drain your mana. And that's only interesting because it makes sorceresses almost unplayable.
Yeah, I mean, and playing against a denial strategy is never fun.
Right, exactly. So, like, it's one of those things where, like, the... Well, and then also, they theoretically added, like, 5 new dungeons, except that I don't think I could have... if you put side-by-side with, like, one of the similarly themed original dungeons, I don't think I could tell which was which.
Mm-hmm. Just hearing all of this, I don't understand why they're going with this model when they could release the game and then put people on working on an expansion pack. Like, right. I understand why they're not doing it, because it needs to be an ongoing live service where they have KPIs, blah blah blah, get people in, hold them for the long haul, etc. Maybe sell them some cosmetic items, or down the line maybe the cosmetic items start having mechanical benefits, just like the usual pipeline of this kind of stuff, right?
But
it doesn't sound like it's making anybody happy. It is just encouraging compulsive play.
The weird thing is both Destiny 2 and Warframe have kind of figured out how to do this model, which boils down to like actually have the seasonal content have good story.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, for what Diablo has for story, it is good story, but that's not what Diablo focuses on.
Nowhere nearly as good as the campaign. There's no cutscenes.
Yeah, that's fair. I would have liked a cutscene.
Yeah, cutscenes cost money.
it is an extremely fun game to play.
Okay.
Like the moment to moment, and the season provides a good reason to try more, to like try it from a different angle, and just enough new tweaks to keep things interesting. Like I said, the build that I'm using right now would not be possible without the seasonal content. So there's, you know, there is some interesting stuff going on. And I think as people experiment more, we'll come to see more and more interesting new builds. That's the stated objective, is that, you know, seasonal content gives you interesting new ways to play these characters and these classes. So, we shall see, but yeah. I guess the highest praise I can give is I'm pleased to report this isn't Armageddon for Diablo 4. Like, this isn't, the game going belly up.
I mean,
I think that's because you got lucky with what class you loaded.
Yeah,
fair enough.
I don't know if we talked about it or not, because I saw this in passing over the last week, how like the owners of the company, I guess, had a fireside chat to talk about changes and stuff.
Yep.
And basically how they would try and like fix right the ship, I guess, going forward. Did you guys follow that at all? Or
yeah, so that
I watched like 10 minutes of it. It was a giant, we're sorry.
Yeah.
I thought that was particularly damning, because they're basically like, oh yeah, we're going to fix this in a couple weeks. It's like, well, the season is only 7 weeks long. Like,
yeah,
you're
yeah,
planning on it, making the game playable when it's halfway done.
Yeah, like, don't say you're gonna fix it. Say it'll be better the next time. You know,
or like, just say like, we're rolling back the patch. Like, you could do that literally today.
It's just, I don't know. I'm going to hop back on my usual saw here and say, balance kills everything. If they are worried about PvP, for however small but vocal that audience is, balance PvP and PvE separately. Make every class fun to play, and do not shit on anybody. do not shit on anybody's class just because somebody complains that it's too powerful.
Which
yeah, that was the most non sequitur thing that I saw in the portion of that fireside chat that I did watch, where, because like Money Smith said, the sorceress was you know already weak, and then it felt like their one viable build was the hardest hit. And basically, what they said is like, you know, part of the fun of the game is we want to give people lots of different options and choices for how to play a given class, and so our thinking was, hey, let's bring the one quote unquote viable build kind of back in line with the rest, and then we can patch them all up together. Which is, I understand from like how systems are all interconnected why that might make sense, but and they acknowledge this from a fun perspective, that is terrible.
Yeah, no, like, don't make your game less fun, you assholes.
Well, and also it doesn't make sense to say like, we're going to do this and then we're going to break it so that we can fix it in 2 weeks. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's weird. Like, that's basically what you're advocating is more or less how Warframe works, where, you know, the game is not balanced at all, but at the same time, there's also no cap on how much enemies can scale.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of just, you'll be incredibly overpowered, but eventually, you know, progress to the point where the game is sufficiently challenging.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just, the reason that I hit that so hard, specifically separating balance for PvP and PvE, is because Elden Ring did it. Like, it took them a little bit, but FromSoft eventually said, like, we're not going to make changes, you know, just outside of very, you know, very particular circumstances. We're not going to make like crazy changes to your PvE builds that suddenly derail your current playthrough just because of, you know, trying to control the current PvP meta.
Mm. The funniest thing I think is, it seems like there's at least some degree to which they care not only about the balance of PvP, but the balance of hardcore mode.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, is like, I feel like, who cares?
Balance for that separately, too. Like, they are different ways to play the game, and so there can't be a one-size-fits-all approach. It's madness to try. I say this having not played the game, so grains of salt, all of that.
Yeah,
like, I don't mean to undercut myself, but I feel like it's a sound principle, right?
I think a lot of this, okay, this game to me overall looks like they put devs from World of Warcraft in charge.
Okay.
Because just, this is, there is a bunch of stuff in this game that feels like an MMO.
Well, yeah. Open world stuff and yeah.
And I think unfortunately it suffers for it.
Well, yeah.
Clap, 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 clap your hands.
Oh man. You got anything else, David?
No, that's it. I am downloading Exo Primal because that game looks bonkers.
Sorry, I got that mixed up with Xeno. Xenonauts. Exo Primal, that's the Capcom squad shooter about dinosaurs kind of thing.
That is the futuristic mecha game where you get trapped in an island controlled by an artificial intelligence who wants to perform combat experiments by forcing you to fight dinosaurs.
Yep.
We had this game. This was I played this.
Second Extinction.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it's actually, I feel a little bit like, am I the crazy one that I'm not hearing more comparisons to Second Extinction?
That just means we were like the only two people that played it.
Yeah,
that could be. I mean, technically, I don't think Second Extinction's out yet, but
Exo Primal is a Game Pass one too, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it looks neat. It's a multiplayer game, so I'm definitely not going to play it. But let us know how it is.
Yeah, I am excited. It's another game trying the PvE, but with a little bit of P in there.
Oh yeah,
just a little bit of P in it.
Jesus, can't be a title. like a little bit of co-opetition, I think, is the way that we like to say that.
Saying there's a little bit of pee.
Just a little pee in there.
Yeah. It's like lies of pee. Lies of a little bit of pee.
That was really disappointing with that demo. Name. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
I feel bad or conflicted about that game because it looks like a potentially interesting game and nothing they've done is, merits a boycott. However, I do kind of want to punish them for how dumb that name is.
Well, it's just, fortunately, they have to deal with the consequences regardless. So, yeah, I don't. I don't care for that name. I also didn't care for the demo. They've got a lot of work to do to win me back.
Is it out now?
No, I think it's out this month or two. Yeah, I think it comes out like September, October. Yeah. For me, I'm gonna be a real bummer. The only thing I did was I finished up Amnesia the Bunker. That continues to be a really, really good game. And is really good through the end. Go ahead, David.
So I was watching the stream where you finished it. Did you think, was the ending kind of sudden?
A little bit. That's primarily because of the way the game the way the game tells its story. Mm-hmm. Previous Amnesia games have defined story sections where like stuff is told to you. Characters will talk to you, etc. This one is almost entirely through notes and things. And because you can approach most of these areas in any order that you would like to, and also like you do not need to see everything, there are key story details that I missed. Mm-hmm. It's not sudden insofar as the setup is incredibly simple, which is you've got to find the dynamite and you have to find the handle for the detonator. And that's it. That's what you've got. And so when I found those two things, it was like, okay, I'm probably seeing the end game based on runtime and based on, stuff that I have seen before, and that was the case. So it has that kind of working in its favor. There are key story details that I missed because I missed those notes. The reason that I also feel like I expected a little bit more for certain beats to hit is because it kind of upends the formula of an Amnesia story. And I'm not going to venture into details about that because it could be a little bit of a story, story spoiler kind of deal.
The details that you missed, does it only affect your understanding of the narrative, or does it like affect gameplay elements in the in-game?
It only affects your understanding of the narrative. Okay. Like the things that happened, like you wake up after everybody is gone. Mm-hmm. And the notes that you find shed light on like the things that happened and the order. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Appropriately enough, you have amnesia.
Yeah. Yeah. But not for the, yeah. It's neat. I'm happy that they changed the formula a little bit, and there are reasons that this could only have that this story could only have been told after Rebirth was done, even though this takes place before Rebirth does. This is 1916, and I believe Rebirth is 1936. So maybe there will be one. Oh wait, no, I think Machine for Pigs takes place in 1996 or 1896. So fuck.
I'd actually really love to see a more modern one. I could see that being kind of interesting.
Yeah, I could mess around. I could fuck with that. Yeah. Like, but
1980s,
yeah.
Really pull in the Reagan Thatcher era.
Yeah. Yeah. It still gets full throated endorsement for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, looked really cool.
Yeah. Any questions about it? I feel like I have kind of laid down my base thoughts about the mechanics and stuff. But I want to just, before I close the books on it here, want to open it up and see if anybody has any lingering thoughts or questions.
I don't think so.
Cool.
Yeah. It looks cool, but it looks like you die too many times for it to be fun for me. But I enjoyed watching somebody else play it.
You do die an awful lot. It is a very difficult game when you play it on normal. My understanding is a lot of the frustration that I found, I didn't really feel the frustration because it was, when I died, it was usually pretty funny, or at least illustrative of how I could succeed in the future. You know, it could be a lot for the majority of people, I think. And I'm not saying that to be like pro MLG, whatever. I'm just saying that to be like, no, I'm just really accustomed to, you know, horror games where you die instantly for no reason, I guess.
So it seemed like, oh, God.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, it seemed like the very last sequence.
That had some jank.
Yeah. Huh?
That had some jank.
Yeah, had some jank. Wasn't necessarily well telegraphed or... You could basically, it looked like you could be doing the right thing, but not in the way the game wanted you to, and it just wouldn't work.
Has to do with timing of like animations for the like you doing things from first person, and those not feeling tuned alongside when things become visible in the dark was like very specifically the dissonance that I was running into. There was an easier way to solve that problem that I was trying to solve that I only like figured out after the pressure was off. But if I say any more, then I'm giving away details about it. But you're right that the way I experienced it was very janky. Yeah. But yeah, my understanding, so I played it on normal, like just like, hey, I've played Amnesia games before. I don't even know if there's like a pure story mode where the monster is barely a factor, but the one notch below normal where they change the way checkpointing and save points work. People in the chat were saying that like that is tuned like perfect. If you think that the way that the game is kind of like paced or structured, feels like it's too much. Like you can get in there and still get a great deal of what is like cool and special about this without subjecting yourself to like the complete just rigor of it.
Like Alien.
Or you know, just the base game out of the box also feels a lot like Pathologic or Pathologic 2, specifically Pathologic 2 with the normal just like default difficulty options. So you know, if you have played and experienced those things and think like, yeah, no, I want something more like this, then this might be for you. If that is way too much and way too alienating, there are pressure release valves for you if that is the case.
Nice.
Yeah. The other thing that I've been playing, I've not played enough to actually speak about, but I have started playing Rain Code, the Master Detectives Archive. This is that a game.
Quite a name.
Yeah, this is a game that Jala is playing as well. So I imagine next time she is on, we will have stuff to say about it. It's by the Danganronpa guy, I believe, and it is another like murder mystery sci-fi anime kind of visual novel, but also mystery solving. You know, murder mystery solving kind of thing. But I've not played enough of it to like, you know, say like what the shape of it is. So, look forward to that in the future.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Is anyone playing the Final Fantasy game, or has everyone dropped off that?
I dropped off of it mostly because my like console playing time has been dedicated to homework. Raincode is Amnesia is a stream game, and Raincode is a I'm playing this in bed game.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where usually we ask you a question and then you answer it, but it is a free play this time, which means that you ask us the questions and then we answer. So I will be proctoring this. We will not be going around. I will be asking the questions. Callum asks, what is a gaming trend that you think is actually good?
I got one for this. I think I've used this like probably two or three times in the last couple of weeks, but YouTube run throughs of video games, I think is really helpful. Because one, if you want to try and see how far through the game you are, if there's like 100% playthrough of a game, you can find that out pretty easily. And then two, it kind of replaces like walkthroughs, where it's like, if you've gotten to a point and you're stuck, if it's like a puzzle game, you can like just see that part and then pause it and then go on and play the game yourself.
Yeah. I do wish that those and wikis didn't supplant actual walkthroughs or FAQs. But I have grown to adapt to this.
I think I'm okay with that replacing like walkthroughs, but
I really like being able to control F through text, you know, and like jump specifically to what it is as opposed to scrubbing around. But that's the only time I'll be a poopy pants about this.
See, my missing of walkthroughs is not at all due to anything functional, and it's entirely just missing the way they were written. Just, you know, the, hey, it's your boy, Kratos fan 420 with the walkthrough of,
yeah.
Version final 2. Yeah.
GameVax is a treasure, and the second they try and take that down is the second I start lighting fires.
Just to their house, or...
Anyway, I mean, I'll say mine, which is probably pretty predictable, but labor action in games.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
You know, like that is an, you know, unalloyed good. Anywhere from indie studios to like actually advertising, like, hey, we made this without crunch, you know, kind of stuff, up to actual, you know, unions and organizations, even attempts at larger studios. I just, I'm here for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This isn't games, but I've been pretty impressed with, you know, how much solidarity there has been with the writer's strike.
Yep.
You know, even among just like regular people, like I am sure there are like Fox Newsites that are super pissed, but everyone I've seen is, been like, nah, I'm cool with it.
So even my stepdad, who's really conservative, you know, I was just talking about it or whatever, and like even he says like, yeah, no, these actors and writers, they need to be treated better.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
He's like, he's a huge, he fucking loves Hollywood and loves television and movies and stuff, so like he understands kind of where the value is created. Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, for me, it's early access.
Okay.
Specifically, early access where they're saying explicitly, "Hey, we're putting this game out there for you to play, and it might be, you know, various stages of finish. We might be changing significant things. There might be stuff missing." Like, I think that's good for everyone. It gives you a chance to, you know, try something, be in early, and kind of see it grow. Gives the devs a chance to get like real world feedback on their game, which I think leads to the game being better overall. And as long as everything is like I said, above board and explicit that, hey, this is an early access game, I really like that they can get it in people's hands earlier and people can kind of play a more formative role in its development.
Yeah. How, you know, and if indies can be funded and if they follow through. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, how about you?
So I hate saying this because I feel like I'm just being this super stereotypical, like, progressive dude, but I think an honest answer is, more diverse, protagonists in games.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to, I don't know, I always feel like I'm the dude doing, like, the virtue signaling thing, but...
You know, I think all of us are going down with that ship. So.
Oh yeah, totally, yeah. Totally. But like, you know, the reality is like you can take a super generic storyline and then like have it be told from a perspective that I haven't seen before, and it's now a unique storyline, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Counterpoint, Forspoken.
But I mean the devil's in the details there. Yeah.
But no, I agree overall.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that was all of us. So I'll go on to the next one here. Case says, while the Steam Deck has taken the retro handheld world by storm, have any of you considered some of these smaller and lower budget options? I just picked up the Pow Kitty V90, about $50 on Amazon, $40 if you buy direct from Pow Kitty. It is a small Game Boy Advance SP style handheld, and I'm already falling in love with it.
I really want to own something called a Pow Kitty 490, like just on principle.
I'm curious because that's like a really tempting price point on these. I dig them aesthetically and like for the role that they can play for folks. Oh, wow. That is actually really cool. God, the Game Boy Advance SP was just the perfect piece of hardware aside from the lack of headphone port. It's just I am so accustomed to playing on like PC emulators, you know, with the ability to like do fast forward and save state and stuff with keys, something like this, even playing emulated games on the Steam Deck is not it's not preferable to me.
What would you be playing on these? Are these just like computers?
So the one that I have, the retro handheld that I picked up, it is the Anbernic RG552, which is like a smaller Switch that has basically a fork of, LibRetro on it, I forget what the front end is, but just able to emulate a whole bunch of stuff from one kind of runtime, kind of deal. And like the stuff that it comes loaded with, at least mine, which is, it's shocking that they sold this to me, maybe on Amazon, I'm not sure. But it will emulate basically anything prior up to and including like Dreamcast or PS2, but Dreamcast and PS2, not very well. I would say by and large, the majority of things that people play, like the majority of time that people have spent on these is playing for some reason, Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire and Emerald, you know, but yeah, just a way to play older games. I have spent the most time because it can emulate older arcades, like playing old arcade fighting games on it, like, loading up like Marvel Super Heroes, right? Or, just the X-Men fighting games, right? But that's just me. So
the thing I think would be ideal for me is if I could get something that I could play, like, the various pixel art, you know, indie games that are always coming out.
Oh, yeah, you're describing a Switch or a Steam Deck.
Oh, am I?
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's like, what, 5 times more expensive?
Yes. This is mostly for playing older shit.
Okay. Like, still, though, that's still a really, really cool piece of hardware.
Yeah. So that's my answer. Like I have messed around with these, but it just, they don't necessarily have a place in my life because if I'm playing something older, it's for a show. And so I need to be like at a computer where I can do save states or fast forward, rewind, or more easily pause and take notes. It's hard to play and take notes on a portable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anybody else mess around with these?
I was very interested in the Playdate until I found out that the crank does not actually charge the battery.
Oh, yeah, that one looked awesome.
And
yeah.
that killed my interest immediately.
I got it because I want to promote, like, I want to support that company. Like, I think they're really good. The screen is too small and the lack of backlight makes it impossible for me to see what's happening on it.
Mm-hmm.
So... that just ended up being however much money that cost being thrown in, like, oh yeah, independent hardware developer, like, you go, maybe make a better one next time. So
on a somewhat related to this topic, previous topics, after seeing Amnesia the Bunker, I just want everything to have a ripcord charger.
Just start it up like a wind-up toy.
Yep.
Yeah. Ben, when you play older games, how do you play them?
I guess I don't really play older games. I think
how'd you fuck around with Chrono Trigger?
I played on Steam, on my computer.
Yeah.
I think if I were to play anything like this, I'd be most tempted to get like a Raspberry Pi and try and make like my little handheld thing just as like an exercise. But
that could be fun. No,
yeah,
I got a.
Could you install it with a hand crank that charges the battery?
Probably. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk.
Those are fun projects. I got a Raspberry Pi, and from somebody on Etsy, I got like a 3D printed, like sits in your lap. Like arcade, like stick with six buttons, you know, mm-hmm. or I guess eight buttons or whatever. And like putting that together with a Raspberry Pi, I think it was three at the time. And like, you know, figuring out how to get that to play. It didn't stick around. I mean, it's still somewhere because I never threw anything away. But it was a fun project at the very mm-hmm. least. Yeah. Let's see. Eric writes or asks, Link's Awakening, Link's Awakening DX, or Link's Awakening for the Switch?
I mean, clearly Link Awakening to his identity as a Switch.
Hey, you know, we should not force Link to choose is the thing. Link's been over many different iterations.
My kids have been playing Breath of the Wild.
Okay.
Luke and Milo. And it's really funny because Milo's a bit more confident with controls. So Luke just kind of directs him. But listening to them like strategize and all this stuff. But the playground hearsay has made its way. And I forget how it came up. But they're like, oh, yeah. And there's one part where you have to dress as a girl.
Yeah.
What? Uh-huh. What? Really? Yeah. Well, there's a village where only girls are allowed. You have to dress up as a girl.
Yeah, the Gerudo. Yeah.
And this is like, and then they turn to me and they're like, Dad, is that real?
Yeah.
I guess they had some friend tell them it was coming.
Whereas Tears of the Kingdom is just like, nope, now every other costume.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah, I continue.
Yeah, no. So Link's Awakening for the Game Boy. Link's Awakening, the updated Game Boy Color version with the extra dungeon that has the mechanics that require, you know, just no attack only the blue enemies here, attack only the orange enemies here, or the updated Link's Awakening for the Switch. I mean, my answer for this, I think that extra dungeon is bad, and I don't care about color. Give me the original, baby.
I've only played the Switch one, so that is my default answer, but I don't take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have had, oh, go on.
I was going to say, I have not played any of them, so can't say.
So I have only played the original one. However, this is probably one of my favorite Zelda games, except that Like, I think there are definitely some points where its mobile nature, you know, shows some jank. So I could see the remake maybe being my ideal.
The remake does not fix those as much as you would think.
That is unfortunate.
Yeah. I understand, like, I like this game an awful lot, too. I think so, like, the distinction between these is just one of personal preference. It's not like I like any of these three is so bad that I would say skip
it.
Yeah, just play it however you can. So yeah, it's a good game. Finally here we have Random Sum, who asks, wow, I can't believe they greenlit the Cole Ross biopic, and they're using time machine technology for casting. You get to pick who plays yourself, so who will it be? Obviously Philip Seymour Hoffman, come on.
Ah, hell yeah.
Yeah,
I was gonna say Justin Roiland for you, but that's a lot more problematic now. Yeah. Over the past year.
I was gonna say, like, how dare you, those fighting words, Merkel. Yeah, you do not have to say who I would be cast as, so but yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman, there we go.
Who would young Cole be cast as?
Young Cole, young Ron Howard. Opie. Let's get Opie in there. Yeah. Oh gosh. And that's the segment. Thank you everybody for responding.
I thought the question is, who would you cast yourself as?
Oh, yourself? Yeah, no, okay.
Damn.
Yeah. Okay, everybody can do their cast.
We'll be the side characters, but we still matter.
No, you don't have to be side character. Everybody can be the main character of their own story.
AI stand-in that just feed enough images of me to the computer, and it'll do all my lines.
Well, I mean, if the strike doesn't work out, yeah.
Yeah. I have a pro sports doppelganger. I don't know if I have an actor doppelganger.
Who's your pro sports doppelganger?
So I found this out in Peru. Andre Pierre Gignac. He is a footballer. You wouldn't recognize him. I'll post a link. Or I guess you would recognize him because you would recognize me.
Oh, wow.
And so we are literally in a restaurant in Peru. And there, it's like us, and then there's like a French, a table of like French travelers. And I just, they're like saying, they kind of come up to me, they're like, Gignac? I'm like, what? Huh? Like, oh, okay, never mind. You look just like Gignac. You know, and they proceed to tell me about him. But yeah, he looks enough like me that I was mistaken for him in a restaurant.
That is actually kind of spooky.
Yeah, here, like, I'll drop it into the slide. Yeah.
I was going to say, did you...
Go ahead. So,
I thought you posted a picture of him, and I go, and it's just a giant turtle monster.
No, that's for the news segment.
Do you see that inset that I just posted of just the eyes, the eyebrows, and like the top of the nose?
So the triangle is strong with this one.
So I mean, yeah, these he'd have to do the Batman thing.
Yeah, I mean, you probably have to work on the accent quite a lot, or you could overdub him.
Yeah, yeah. I really like my greatest regret in life is that in that restaurant I didn't go wee and see,
see roll with it, see if you get some free drinks, for God's sake. Yeah.
So yeah, well, see if he's gone into acting now that his football career is over.
That's a little too spooky, actually.
for anyone who's never seen a picture of me and listens to the show,
yeah,
then you can look that up.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I can only think of ones for you guys. I can't think of one for me.
Oh, yeah.
But I will so for Dennis, I was gonna say there's not a good exact picture, but I feel like Nick Frost, if you combined all the ways he looked at certain times in his life, could possibly hit the Dennis zone a little bit.
He'd have to lose some weight.
Yeah, he's skinnier in like the World's End.
True.
So he would need to be like that weight, but he would need to look younger.
Yeah.
All right.
It could possibly get there, but if you look at like random picture of him, it probably doesn't match up right now. And then I was gonna say for David, I was gonna say maybe Guilfoyle from Silicon Valley.
Oh, he could doing maybe, like a yeah, Martin Starr. Yeah.
He could maybe hit that range, but he would yeah.
Yeah.
So the problem I have is I don't know any movie stars or whatever. Actors.
Actually, no, here we go. Okay, so if I want to be Nick Frost, then Money Smith can be Simon Pegg.
Oh.
It's perfect.
I mean, if we want to do some cross-casting, you know who I think could pull off a killer, David, actually? Tilda Swinton.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, that actually fits really well.
Very similar facial structure, yeah.
And she has the range.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the Hawk Muppet could play me, I think, too.
You mean Sam Eagle?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm Googling the name as we speak, but what popped in my mind for you, Merkel, would be Bill Hader.
Oh, Bill Hader's really good. Yeah, Bill Hader. Yeah, that's the one. Wow, this is really self-indulgent.
That is a good sniping question.
So,
what?
I found the image. Here we go.
So, for I hope this is not insulting. For young Cole, can I pitch the kid from A Christmas Story?
Oh yeah, that would be pretty good. It's the cheeks. Yeah, Peter something is that actor's name. Let me take a look here. Peter Billingsley. Yes, that would work. You know, he could probably fill in for modern day if he grew his hair out.
Yeah, I have no idea what he's done since then.
Yeah, he's a director. He was in a Marvel movie at some point.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All I know is that the bully from that was the greatest character from the Resident Evil movies.
Oh yeah, he played Nikolai in RE. Ah man, that was the second one. Zach Ward is that guy's name. He also played. He was the brother on Titus.
Oh, yeah. Just the height of his career. Well, for me at least, will always be his. Play dead.
Yeah, no, he's had and Zach Ward's been in a lot. Yeah, I don't know. I said this on Twitter, but like, for as much as I have trouble,
excuse me, on what?
Jesus fucking, I'm not gonna do that. No, I said this on social media, which is, for as much as I have trouble with faces in real life, it's a real problem. What I have is a superpower, which is to identify like any given actor, who they are a dime store version of, or who they are a teleporter accident version of. Is like, I can look at that person and say like, oh yeah, that's totally like discount Billy Bob Thornton is who we're working with here.
That's good. Yeah, I like that.
And yeah, that's all the questions we have. Thank you. I think we had a lot of fun. If you would like to participate in the future, you can go to Facebook and join the Duckfeed community group and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this one.
Mm-hmm.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the things that are going on in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Ben, what is going on? Speaking of labor action, what is going on with video games and actors?
Yeah, there's an article Polygon put out that talked about basically how the SAG-AFTRA strike is affecting like video games right now. And it's kind of interesting. There's some kind of examples of like edge cases that I thought was interesting. Yeah. So basically, if you're just doing motion capture for a game, that's all like good and hunky dory. Like even if you're a unionized person, you can still continue to do that. So they don't consider that to be a part of like the larger Hollywood sphere. However, if you're doing like a live action, like movie type thing that's inspired by a video game, that does fall under the strike and you cannot do that. And so some examples kind of came out. Comic-Con was last week. And so some examples kind of came out with who didn't show up since the strike's going on. So I think the main example is like the Twisted Metal show that they're doing with like Will Arnett and Anthony Mackie. They didn't attend that at all because it's more on the live action end of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it is specifically like it is for Peacock is what they're doing that for. And like they very specifically have a beef with the streamers. So,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that was just kind of like an interesting detail. I'm sure all of whatever Hideo Kojima is doing right now is all A-OK, though. So
yeah, fucking capturing people's souls with mocap suits. Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah, this is, I mean, it's all a matter of waiting for guidance from the union. You know, like, I think that there are just so many different ways that like talents can work that like you do not know where a minefield for scabbing might be. So,
yeah.
I was just going to say, there's been a whole talk with like Dragon Con on how it's going to affect it, in particular because unlike the Comic-Con, Dragon Con generally isn't as big on promotions for current things,
right?
But like if you have a panel that's you know some actor's been in hundreds of things, just kind of reminiscing about his career, like is that still count?
Yeah, are they promoting something where somebody could say, oh, I would really like to watch X show, and that show is only available on a streamer that is currently like being struck against? Yeah, right.
There's also been some discussion of like if people want to show solidarity, should they avoid cosplaying as things that are currently in production, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
I think
good.
Another interesting example is like SAG-AFTRA said that they would like ban people from joining in the future if they were like an influencer who's just like promoting like a Hollywood studio now, like during the strike, which seems like it's somewhat particularly aggressive. But
I think that is de rigueur is the thing, that is de rigueur. Any kind of scabbing will preclude you from union membership.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a particularly interesting example, though, because it's like, kind of holding people for something that they did years prior. If they, they might not have been interested in being an actor at one point in time and decide later. But anyway, the only reason why I bring up that example is it's interesting that it can be that aggressive within the realm of Hollywood, but it's much more open-ended if it's a product that's outside of the Hollywood sphere. So
I feel like that's a little bit short-sighted. But also the companies themselves, I don't know. Like,
I mean, I'm glad that they're letting people still do stuff in video games because it's
I also think it's probably in their best interest to be perceived as accommodating.
Yeah. I just what I was gonna say was like so many of them are like technically, I mean, even if they are part of a multinational kind of place, like the sub studio might have agreements internationally where they are abiding with a union contract somewhere, like how House of the Dragon is technically still covered under a union. They are covered under the British Union because every actor working on that is British, but that union itself is precluded from striking because there's no protection for sympathy strikes, American. So like I've got no idea what the protection is. Like, if somebody is doing like mocap for a game published by Sony, which would be the case for Spider-Man 2, right? Even if it is, well, that's an American company, so I don't know. It's complicated, and the fact that everything is covered under so many different contracts, like you just really need union guidance for like how to like be in solidarity, and that affects like recap podcast too. Like, I just it's real, man. It's tough.
Yeah.
I learned that sympathy striking is a thing just now.
Yeah.
I saw, now that I can use that term, that Snoop Dogg is sympathy striking.
Yeah.
Canceled a couple concerts.
Is the other thing that the other strike that the Teamsters are doing, is that technically a sympathy strike?
No, that just happens to be concurrent.
The UPS one, but the one with Hollywood.
With Hollywood, I'm not sure. I've not heard about a specific Teamsters action. I know the IATSE is doing a concurrent strike as well, but that is not so much a sympathy strike as it is like they have their own contract dispute that is currently active. It just happens to be going on at the same time. Same thing with Broadway. Yeah.
So this was, you know, some YouTube I was watching or something. I didn't get the details, but basically the premise they said was there was some discussion that the Teamsters might strike in order to prevent the studios from trying to use reality TV as an end run around the strike.
That it would be pretty, excuse me for using the word, based. Mm-hmm. No, it'd be great if they did that.
Yeah. Yeah. I may, like I said, this was just like kind of telephone getting to me. So I might have been misunderstanding.
Yeah. I've got no idea. The only Teamster strike that I'm current on is, I mean, as of today, them at least getting nominal approval of their terms. It hasn't been voted on.
Getting air conditioning in their vehicles.
Getting air conditioning on any vehicles manufactured after today. So the current fleet will still be unair conditioned, etc. It has not been approved by the actual body of UPS drivers in the Teamsters Union, but it is a positive sign at the very least that UPS has caved a little bit toward demands. Sorry, it's a really fascinating world, and like it's so cool to learn about. But also, you start sounding like a madman throwing out all of these different punctuations and stuff.
I mean this in a optimistic sense, but yeah, this is like the one thing going on in the world right now that like actually I feel optimistic about.
Yeah. I mean, no complaints there. It is something to feel very positive about. Yeah. Let's see. I got these in an order in my tabs. Let's see. Oh, I've got mine. So there has been a bunch of Armored Core 6 details that have been announced as kind of preview players have gone in and gameplay. There was a gameplay live stream kind of revealing some more details. The story that I am bringing very specifically about that, because I'm kind of staying a little bit under the bunker in terms of you know, gameplay and story stuff.
Literally.
Well, yeah. I mean, at least as regards Amnesia. Armored Core 6 is going to be compatible with Steam Deck. Same way that Elden Ring is. Who knows? Because the Steam Deck is still, you know, like it's still aging hardware. If it's going to be able to run it at like really high frame rates or whatever, but From seems very committed based on their quotes, like, hey, we develop games on PC first and foremost, they say, and they want to optimize for that, and they want to make it as playable as possible for as wide of a number of people as possible. That is kind of concurrent with like the studio has changed a lot since they have last published an Armored Core game. This is the first Armored Core game that is getting a PC launch with the rest of the launches. Yeah,
very cool.
So like that is news, but also it's just kind of like a thing that is happening, so it falls back into the usual Cole styling. So it's cool. I do not know what platform I'm going to play it on yet, but this is another tick in the PC column.
Do you know off the top of your head what the release date is?
August the 25th.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Yep. So
I feel like I have the weirdest relation to this game so far because I've not actually watched any of the trailers or whatever. The only thing I've gotten has been like secondhand. Mm-hmm. But it's all just been just stuff like when it first came out, I heard lots of jokes about like, oh, is it going to have like perfect parries and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. And then a little while later, people like, yes, actually.
Yeah, no, it's going to be Sekiro as hell. Yeah.
And I don't know, that's just really entertaining to me.
I'm curious about it. but I do not know if I'm excited for it. I am, let's say, cautiously optimistic, let's say. Yeah. David, what is happening with Atari?
Yeah, so Atari is putting out some collector's items for their old arcade games that are basically reproductions of the circuit boards from the arcade cabinets. So these, they aren't actually populated, so they don't have the resistors, capacitors, you know, chips, stuff like that. But they are actual functioning circuit boards. So, like, if you took and plugged in all of the, you know, all of the things, you could then plug it into an arcade cabinet and it would operate.
Wow.
Okay, so it's not like hardware programmed like an old board would be, but if you plugged it into a JAMA board or whatever, it would still boot up and you could see it as, you know, the way it ran.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, it's a one-to-one recreation of the original boards.
Okay.
They've also, though, got on them like the kind of title art on it, real, you know, real bold, and screen print on it, some like history of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, they're designed to be, you know, like hung up in a shadow box, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But
although,
you know,
if I was building a shadow box, I would want the original one with the transistors and stuff.
That's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think this is a really interesting way to do this. This is kind of a neat idea. I'm also interested to see if this will have any impact on games preservation, because like theoretically they're, you know, this is them putting out new boards if your old board ran out of bit juice or whatever.
I mean, if the capacitor's rotted is the, you know, the real concern, but yes.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's like, if it will, whether or not it counts as game preservation is if you're a freak or if you're a freak. Yeah. I've got no idea. Like, I don't know if these would be, well, they wouldn't because Atari didn't publish it, but like if it would be like eligible for like the man, Donkey Kong, you know, like it needs to be on an original cabinet if you want to go for a high score, like because of all the fuckery people have done, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So I mean, that is up for the high score bodies to determine, but like, this is good. Like, as long as it keeps people playing games in the arcade cabinet format. Yeah.
The thing that's kind of funny to me is I think the only one of these games I've actually played is Lunar Lander.
Lunar Lander is good. The first time I played Lunar Lander was in a science museum in Columbia, South Carolina.
I'm serious. You know, it's kind of science.
Yeah, it was in the moon landing section. So it's weird that it like this is on there because that is a vector game, kind of like Asteroids is, and very pointedly so because it needs to scale. Like as you get closer to the ground, it needs to zoom in. Lunar Lander is good though. Like, it's hard. It is made to make you feel bad, but it's good once you get it.
I really wish that vector games would become the new aesthetic that indie games discovered.
Oh, your lips to God's ears.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are people who are like Return with a V, you know, like on Twitter, and they post a shitload of, you know, photos of Roman and Greek statues or whatever. I'm sorry
on what?
Oh, Jesus Christ, Dennis. If you're gonna keep doing this, we're gonna need to sever our professional relationship. I respect you, but for God's sake,
don't worry, I'm only gonna do it until the platform implodes, which, judging by the way things are going, is gonna be like one or two more days.
I hate it and I'll never quit. No, but I'm a return guy for vector graphics. You have walked right into my wheelhouse, David. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Neat. Dennis, what is this cool game that looks fun?
Yeah, so I've got two kind of light ones. One is definitely a thing is happening. story where I found out about a game called ASIM Altered Axis. So I am well documented in my love for asymmetrical gameplay. And this is a 1v up to 5 game where the team is trying to sneak in and steal from a base. And they're kind of in a third person action kind of mode, whereas the kind of base owner is building and defending the base, a la like a RTS isometric kind of scale.
Okay.
So really, really cool idea. The thing that sets it apart from other games that are similar, which one came out recently. Where is that title? Meet Your Maker was one that, that came out like recently.
Make your own Doom level and people online can challenge you. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Exactly. So the big twist on top of that is the maker is there while you are trying to steal.
Okay.
And you are there kind of floating around in God mode, building structures and manipulating things, or just raining down fire on a player if you find them. While they're all trying to work together to steal from your base. And it's a really interesting idea because apparently like when you start the level, it is mostly in darkness. And then the more players get caught, the lighter and harder to hide in the level it gets. And so there's a real kind of tipping towards the maker, if you will, as the game goes on. And they talk about it as like, hey, you sneak in and then you run out. So I think it's really interesting to have a game where like, okay, you know, you reach that tipping point and then it's just like everyone would be split, you know, scatter, and you're all trying to get out of there. So
you're cockroaches.
Yeah. Steam is apparently doing a Stealth Games Fest kind of deal right now.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. Steam Stealth Fest. And so this is one of the games that was featured as part of that. Very interested to check it out. It's like an alpha build of it. We'll see where it goes.
This is it a VR game?
No, at least from what I can tell, no. The top-down maker kind of side of things would definitely fit well as a VR game.
Uh-huh.
And that they're represented by two giant hands in the sky.
Thing. That's what makes me think it's a VR game, because only a VR game would feature hands that much in the UI.
Yeah. So yeah, that is definitely a signal of VR.
Inverse foot fetish.
Oh no. But as far as I can tell, no, there's no VR in the game immediately. So yeah. That is where'd it go? ASIM Altered Axis.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's gonna be tough to remember. Anyway,
that's a bad title.
I also shared just a quick. It's probably nothing, but Magic the Gathering shared a picture of one of their giant beasts with the caption "Behold Dog," and it's got everyone very excited that an Elden Ring crossover might be coming.
That would be a great crossover.
Probably not. But Cole, would that get you to finally learn all the terminology that Ben and I throw around?
No, you can't try too hard. You can't just like throw me some art that looks like a wandering mausoleum on the north side of the Weeping Peninsula with a bunch of undead nobles, probably wouldn't. Also, there are many ways in which this differs from a wandering mausoleum, so it kind of seems to be that they are doing a classic misdirect.
It's existing card art, so
yes,
likely just them goofing on the interwebs.
Mm-hmm.
However, with how well Lord of the Rings has gone as their crossover set, it would be really interesting to see others, and I would be very surprised if there hasn't at least been conversations.
Yeah, at least someone being like, wait, but why aren't we doing a crossover with Elden Ring?
Yeah, I would be disappointed if that's what they were doing, but I don't know. No, just like it would not be like it would be neat to like go in and read the card text if anybody dumped like the textures from the game or whatever. But like, no, it wouldn't be enough to get me to play Magic just because it's just not the, I don't know. If in the 30 years that Magic has been extant, I have not started to play it, then now would be a weird time to start.
Sure.
While I enjoyed the Lord of the Rings set, I feel like it's like the beginning of the end, because now they're going to be like, we should do more IPs because this was like such a success. And then it's like Magic's just going to be a clusterfuck of like Marvel heroes and Gandalf and like Elden Ring and the battlefield. And it's just going to be like, this Lorkana is a nightmare. It's
a Magic expansion.
It's real sweaty. Would be the word that I would use for it if that is the direction that they end up going. And that is a turnoff.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, it made for a good goof on the internet.
Yeah.
And there's a cool asymmetrical game that people can play.
Top rated, or at least the first one that is listed after the initial comment, you know, behold dog, there's somebody saying stop this bullshit crossovers and start doing Magic again. OMFG.
That's pretty good.
And then the second person is because he's a turtle and then cry laughing emoji. So, yeah.
So can I do a just have you seen this crazy thing?
Sure, why not?
Have any of you guys seen anyone streaming or any ads or whatever for the yeah, you want those games, right? So here you go. Now let's see you clear them.
What?
Which is actually the title of a game.
No,
I haven't. This? I haven't. I forget where I saw it, but I have not engaged with it.
So basically, it's someone took all of those fake ads for, was it like Hero Wars or whatever?
The pinpolling ones. Okay, yes. Yeah. I've seen this referred to as those games. Like, yeah, I almost downloaded and played a few of those so I could bring it to the episode tonight. It just didn't work out time-wise. Yeah, this looks really cool to me. Describe what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, you know, there's all these ads, I'm sure everyone's seen them because you can never escape the ad machine. You know, suggesting that Hero Wars or whatever is this puzzle game with, you know, pinpulling puzzles and like, I don't know, like, you know, racing through gates and, you know, all sorts of different mini games. And my understanding is the game is actually nothing like that.
However, no, someone it's like a shitty like Farmville RTS kind of thing.
Right, exactly. However, someone saw this and was like, wait, why don't I just make those games? And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. So like the tower stacking, like rank them up kind of things.
Yep.
Yeah. No, this is a really, really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
What's the
thing? The thing that baffles me is the effort that went into creating the ads for these games without creating the games themselves.
Well, I mean, you can make a video a lot easier than you can make a game.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't have to actually function. And this as a mini game collection, Ben, I posted a link in the Slack. Okay. This as a mini game collection does not need to fully develop these ideas. It just needs to have a preponderance of concepts and then basically ride them until the tread runs off of the tires and then move on to the next one. Yeah. Yeah. That's a ridiculous title. That's an anime ass title. Yeah, you want those games, right? So here you go. Now let's see who cleared them. That is a very good idea for a game. It's a very good idea for a product. I appreciate the moxie.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, this episode went longer than I thought it would. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I don't know. I think we should spend another half hour on unions.
The credit.
No, yeah, buttons.
Oh, yes. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening to level number 466. We really appreciate you taking the time. You know what you can do to help this show. Patreon, you know, join the DuckBeat community on Facebook. Leave ratings or reviews, etc. Dennis, you're the person with the most pressing promotional needs, so I will throw it to you.
Yeah, come see me at Gen Con. You can sign up for events, and I'll teach you how to play Deck of Wonders.
Yeah, you're going to be at the table for the main illustrator for for the event. Yeah.
Yeah. So Lauren Brown is going to have a Deck of Wonders to buy as well. And you can also buy, obviously, her art. And she did the cover art for the whole convention. So, yes, indeed.
Nice. Anjala, though she's not here, I'm not aware of what's coming up, but recently over at JalaChan.place, she has covered, a 3.5 hour episode about Metroid Fusion as the pop culture one. And the Issues episode that just came out here a couple of days ago is about fat phobia and eating disorders. So go check her out over at JalaChan.place. And we will have her on soon.
Yeah, there's also going to be a episode coming out about grind culture and about how unhealthy that is. It's cool. Features some person named Moxie.
Okay.
So yeah, that's the thing.
Neat. Watch for that then. Trying to think here. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Don't think so.
All right. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at Gen Con.
I'm David Meismith. Just here.
I'm Ben Merkel, and you can find me at X.com.
Jesus. suddenly you want to promote that. Okay, all right.
Read my X's on X.com.
Yeah, read my Zeets.
My Zeets, yeah.
I can't. It's just so dumb. It's so
terminally
bad.
Terminally so embarrassing.
Have you seen that they're likely not going to be able to trademark their logo? Oh,
there are so many. We are all going to learn so much about trademark law. And stick around for some titles. Okay, who has titles?
I in a rare turn, I do not have any.
Okay.
Ooh, I have at least one. Let me see. Okay, I actually only have one. I have Talk to Your Kids About Don Henley.
All right, I got three. I got PVE with a little bit of P in there. P is spelled P-E-E. I got Bit Juice because I thought that was funny, and I got you want this podcast, right? So here you go, now listen to it.
what was the second one? I'm sorry.
Bit Juice.
And the second one is you want this podcast, do you? Right. Well,
so listen. Here you go.
So here you go.
Now, let's see you listen to it.
Okay. Let's see. And I don't have any.
Oh, my.
I like Talk to Your Kids About Don Henley. Is anybody opposed to Talk to Your Kids About Don Henley?
No, I like it.
Okay, cool. Well, it is decided.
Woohoo!